Good afternoon. This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, March 31st, 2021, on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. Ahead on our show today, Arkansas lawmakers are narrowing down proposals for constitutional amendments, which they'll refer to voters in 2022. We'll also have highlights of yesterday's press briefing with Governor Asa Hutchinson and state officials, which included the announcement that all Arkansans 16 years old and older are now eligible to receive COVID-19 vaccinations. And the latest story from 150 years of University of Arkansas history, as provided by Charlie Allison. All of that and more ahead on this hour of Ozarks at Large. After our program on Here and Now, the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History is collecting items from the pandemic and the turbulent year of 2020 for an exhibit called In Sickness and in Health. And 10 years after the start of the Syrian Civil War, the humanitarian crisis there is becoming worse, a conversation with a Red Cross official who visited last week. Here and Now begins at 1 o'clock right after this edition of Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas Department of Health is reporting 178 new cases of COVID-19 in yesterday's statistics. The ADH also reported an additional 15 deaths. Seven of those deaths were considered dated or pre-last week. Active cases in the state dropped by 170 people during the last 24 hours, and hospitalizations, now at 170 patients, increased by six. The Oklahoma State Department of Health earlier this morning reported 24-hour testing revealed 390 new cases in that state, the highest number in over a week. The Arkansas Razorback baseball team continues to win. The number one ranked Razorback baseball team defeated Central Arkansas last night 21-8 at Baum Stadium on the University of Arkansas campus. It was the first time that the schools from Fayetteville and Conway had met on the baseball diamond. The Razorbacks will continue their homestand with a three-game set against Auburn that begins Thursday night. This is Ozarks at Large. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm Kyle Kellums. Just ahead, constitutional amendments that may be in front of Arkansas voters. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has that story. This is the third day of five of our spring fundraiser at 91.3 KUAF, and we're in the middle of the day, which means we're at the halfway point of this spring fundraiser. Critical point. We want to keep momentum going so we know that by 7 o'clock Friday night, we've raised the money we need to raise to keep programs like Ozarks at Large, Fresh Air, 1A, and All Things Considered coming to you. And in order to keep that momentum coming and to hit that goal and to keep bringing you strong, independent journalism, we need to hear from you. And we need to hear from you right now at support.kuaf.com. At a time when so many news outlets are cutting back and still struggling to make ends meet, listener support is the reason we're able to expand our newsroom and our news services. We bring you more local news and we extend our online coverage to keep you better connected to the stories that matter. Since the pandemic began, we've launched a podcast about how education has changed during this tumultuous year. We've also launched a podcast about anti-racism and included public discussions in partnership with the Fayetteville Public Library connected to that podcast. We've expanded our local coverage and what we do. Now, one reason we've been able to do that, a big reason, is you stay with us. You stay with us with your ears and with your financial contributions. We do not have to appeal to shareholders every quarter. We appeal to you to support the programming and the services you value with a voluntary contribution. It's the public radio model, and it's the reason 91.3 KUAF continues to bring you independent, intelligent, and balanced news. Thank you if you've already contributed. You're the reason we're still here. If you haven't given or it's been a while, you can go right now to supportkuaf.com. One more reason why you should give right now during this hour of Ozarks at Large, we have a $500 Ozarks at Large specific challenge. It's from our great friends Lynn and Joel Carver. If we can raise combined $500 during this hour of Ozarks at Large, Lynn and Joel Carver of Springdale will match that, and it will be a $1,000 hour right here before the end of this noon edition of Ozarks at Large. All contributions in all amounts of all varieties made during Ozarks at Large today count, and you can make your contribution right now at supportkuaf.com. It takes no more than 2 minutes. And again, all contributions do count. Thanks to Lynn and Joel Carver for their support. Thank you for your support at supportkuaf.com. Arkansas lawmakers presented proposed constitutional amendments to a Senate committee yesterday. Proposed amendments were presented to a House committee earlier this month. The Arkansas legislature can refer a total of three proposals for the 2022 general election ballot. To learn more about this process, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda spoke with Kristen Higgins, a program associate in the Public Policy Center at the University of Arkansas System Division of Agriculture Cooperative Extension Service.
Every time the legislature comes into session, they have the right under the state constitution to refer constitutional amendments to Arkansas voters. The Constitution says that they can refer up to three ballot issues for the voters to decide on the next general election ballot. And every time they put together, they can submit whatever bills they want. And they usually submit, several dozen bills between the House and the Senate. Each chamber has their own process to submit bills and to review them and then finally vote on what they want to refer to the voters. So this session, they have put in the House, they filed 25 proposed constitutional amendments. And in the Senate, they filed 17 joint resolutions is what they call them. And so now they're, working their way through their committee process. The House has a committee, the Senate has a committee, and they hear from the sponsors. They invite the different legislators in to present their bill and just say, here's what it's about. Here's what I'm wanting to do. And right now they are listening to the sponsors. They aren't taking votes yet on the proposals. So they listen to as many as they can, as many of the sponsors who want to come forward. And then they narrow those down to one each. So the House will have one proposed constitutional amendment. The Senate will have one proposed constitutional amendment. And in most years, they agree on a joint third proposal. That's how you get that third one. Some years we've only had two, and then some years we've had three. So then once they get through that process where they've narrowed it down, the House votes on theirs, the Senate votes on theirs, and then they send it to the other chamber, and then they have to vote again. So the legislature as a whole votes on which of the issues to send to voters.
For context, what were the three that voters were able to approve or disapprove of in the 2020 election?
So in 2019, Arkansas legislators referred to the voters in the 2020 election a half-cent sales tax for road construction, which voters approved. They referred a term limits amendment, which voters approved as well, and a proposal that would have changed the citizen initiative and the legislative ballot issue process that we're talking about today. And voters rejected that one in the last election.
So there's over 40 proposals that have been filed this session. Do the topics vary widely, or do they tend to focus around some certain issues like elections or taxes?
They do vary. There's probably about a dozen different topics that they can fall under. It ranges from elections to the legislative session to the perennial proposals that come up a lot, like making the Highway Commission a state agency. This year, there's a tenant rights, you know, renters' rights that have been proposed. Some related to taxes and public debt, schools and education, religious freedom, right to bear arms, a proposal for a minimum wage commission, and more proposals about limiting lawsuit damages for medical lawsuits, changes to the court system, changes to the casino law that was passed a couple years ago. So they run the gamut, and there could be several different types of proposals, maybe even opposite proposals under the same topic. But we go into all of that on our website. We've got a full list of the proposals that have been submitted for people to kind of just peruse and look through and figure out what's going on.
As you've been following this process this month, which of these proposals seem to be gaining traction?
There's, proposals for medical lawsuit limits that's been brought up in past sessions. It's been on the ballot. It's been struck from the ballot a few times. So the legislators seem interested in bringing that back to voters. There's a proposal to allow the legislature to convene itself and not wait for the governor to call them in. So that seems pretty popular right now, mostly because of what we saw this year and last year with the response to COVID pandemic and the emergency session or the emergency state of emergency that the state is under. So that seems pretty popular. There's some interest in the ballot issues themselves. There's a proposal that would require a ballot issue. If voters approve it, it would require 60% of voter approval to have that amendment pass. There's been a lot of interest in that. We've kind of got an idea from the House side, and now we're just waiting to see what the Senate has to do.
Well, thank you, as always, for helping us understand the legislative process just a little bit better.
Thank you.
That was Kristen Higgins, a program associate in the Public Policy Center at the University of Arkansas System Division of Agriculture Cooperative Extension Service. She spoke with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda yesterday. More information is available at uaex.edu/PPC. Still to come on this Wednesday edition of Ozarks at Large, no more mask mandate in Arkansas, and more people eligible for the COVID-19 vaccination. We'll have highlights from yesterday's press briefing with Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson and state officials about COVID-19 and Arkansas. And the next performance from Sona, available on a screen near you. All of that and more still to come on this edition of Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large. The state's mask mandate is no longer in effect, and all Arkansans 16 and older are now eligible to receive COVID-19 vaccinations. Both changes in state policy were announced yesterday by Governor Asa Hutchinson during his weekly press briefing about Arkansas and COVID-19. The decision lifting the mask mandate had been expected, and the governor says he makes the change as the state meets benchmarks he had set forth last month, including fewer than 750 patients hospitalized because of the virus. Arkansas hospitals are well under that number, with fewer than 200 such patients as of yesterday afternoon. But the governor stresses he isn't calling for a moratorium on masks or businesses being able to require masks.
This does not mean that the use of the mask will cease. This mask that I wore in here today, I will continue to have that available. That will continue to be a part of my wardrobe as I leave the house and go to work every day, because there'll be many times during the day that I will wear the mask. While I've been vaccinated, it's important to be courteous to others and to be mindful that we need to protect ourselves and others. And so common sense should govern.
The governor says most government offices will still be using mask protocols, and he expects many businesses and hospitals to also continue requiring face coverings. He says he expects Arkansans to observe those requests, and if Arkansans are bothered by such a request, they can go elsewhere.
And if you don't want to comply with that, then you have options to go somewhere else. That's what it means whenever you lift a mandate and individuals can make responsible decisions as well as businesses. We just need to honor those decisions.
The other big change announced yesterday, the loosening of restrictions on just who is eligible to receive COVID-19 vaccinations, comes after supply continues to outpace demand for shots.
Arkansans age 16 and above are now eligible for the COVID-19 vaccine. This opens up all the vaccine eligibility categories to every adult above 16.
The governor says just because the state is now opening vaccinations to everybody 16 and older doesn't mean everybody 16 and older will be able to receive a shot immediately. There will still be more people wanting a shot than vaccines available for the next few weeks, at least. The governor says the state will be receiving larger weekly supplies for at least the next 3 weeks, though. He says a White House conference call yesterday included news that more than 5 million doses will be distributed nationally for the next 3 weeks, and that translates to about 25,000 additional doses over already confirmed amounts for Arkansas each of the next 3 weeks. The announcements yesterday come after the state has had a few weeks of steady, reduced virus numbers, fewer hospitalizations, fewer active cases, and several consecutive days with fewer than 200 new cases. Those positives, though, the governor says, should not be interpreted as mission accomplished. He says there is a different message he wishes Arkansans to hear.
And that is that with these good numbers, people have a tendency to say, we're out of the woods, there's not a problem anymore, COVID-19 is not in my community. Well, Dr. Romero reminded me today that we have increased the number of cases in terms of the variants that have been found in Arkansas. We see many surrounding states that have gone up in cases, and we see a national trend that concerns the CDC and Dr. Walensky of the CDC. And so we want to make sure we stay in the right direction by taking these steps, but continuing to be careful in how we conduct ourselves, respectful of others, wearing a mask when needed, and then secondly, making sure you get the vaccine. Get the vaccine. Don't delay. Get the vaccine.
Dr. Jose Romero, Arkansas's Secretary of Health, says the variant popularly referred to as the UK variant is showing up in limited, about 7, isolated numbers in Arkansas, but most of those in the last 7 days. He says two other variants, first believed to have been detected in California, are also now in the state. Other states close by are noting variants as well, and Dr. Romero says those cases are worth noting.
What happens around us eventually reaches us, just like we didn't see our first case for many weeks into the pandemic, these growing numbers of cases outside of the state will eventually get here if we are not careful.
With the immediate removal of a mask mandate, public schools in Arkansas must consider their approach as the school year nears conclusion. Johnny Key, Arkansas's Secretary of Education, says each school district will have to have a complete public pathway forward when it comes to protocols.
We are allowing local districts to make the decisions on whether they want to continue having a mask mandate at the local level. They do have to take, the boards of the local school districts have to take some action, either to continue to modify or to eliminate the mask wearing policies. Why is this important? Well, mask wearing, as you'll see in a second, may be taken into consideration when identifying close contacts and identifying persons that may need to quarantine. When reviewing local policies, the boards need to also consider all of the areas of the school. They need to consider what happens on the school bus. They need to consider what happens in cafeterias, in the hallways, in the areas of student activities.
The complete briefing from yesterday can be viewed at the governor's YouTube page.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. KUAF is supported by Mertens Eye and Optical, a full-service eyewear boutique in Fayetteville offering comprehensive eye exams, contact lenses, and a thoughtfully curated collection of luxury eyewear and sunglasses. More information on services and exclusive eyewear lines at MertensEye.com.
This is Ozarks at Large on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to everyone who has contributed during this spring fundraising week so far. We're about halfway through, and we would like to keep the momentum going. If you appreciate having the programs available to you like Fresh Air, 1A, Morning Edition, and Ozarks at Large, please remember each of these programs comes with a set of costs, including Ozarks at Large. We have to pay the people to report. We have to make sure that we have batteries for our remote recorders and computers and a tower to bring you the signal. Plus, the online system that allows you to listen at KUAF.com or listen to the daily editions of Ozarks at Large as a podcast or on demand through your smart speaker by asking it to play Ozarks at Large. All of these services cost money, and we turn to you to help us pay for them. In fact, the biggest majority of our budget, more than three-fourths, comes from you and listeners just like you. You can make your financial contribution right now at supportkuaf.com. Because you listen, it's important that you support the programming and news that you listen to. Supportkuaf.com. And when you make a contribution during this hour of Ozarks at Large, you will be helping us meet a challenge from great friends of Ozarks at Large and KUAF, Lynn and Joel Carver, who have issued an Ozarks at Large specific $500 challenge. We're trying to reach $500 collectively this hour before 1 o'clock to match the $500 from the Carvers. It will be worth $1,000 for KUAF. You don't have to do it all by yourself. We're working together here, and you can make your contribution in your amount at supportkuaf.com. We know that the last 15 months have been filled with fast-breaking news events that have had a big impact on the lives of virtually every one of us, even as there are people in positions of power that would rather keep some of these important stories, or at least part of them, hidden from view. That's why the health of our democracy through wide access to accurate and trustworthy information and understanding will never have been greater for our community and for our country than it has been in the past year and 3 months. You've turned to KUAF to learn more about anti-racism protests, about the coronavirus testing and vaccines, and the very real impacts that this pandemic has had, how children, teachers, and families are making education work as well as they can in a trying time, those stories and more. Throughout the last 14 or 15 months, KUAF has literally been working overtime to meet your needs to stay accurately informed by ramping up our coverage on the air through our podcasts, including new podcasts, and online. The only way all of this can happen is through the power of ongoing donor support that provides the great majority of the funding behind every story, every interview, every newscast, every podcast, every program on KUAF that you count on and learn from. This all relies on you making your donation right now. So please make your difference in the amount you choose. Give right now at supportkuaf.com. And when you do give right now, you will be matching the challenge or helping match the challenge of Lynn and Joel Carver of Springdale. It's only good for this noon edition of Ozarks at Large on this Wednesday. It's a $500 challenge. We would like to meet it by the end of this hour. Supportkuaf.com is how you help us meet the challenge. We do not have phone volunteers again this fundraiser. That's because we are prioritizing safety, both for our phone volunteers and for our staff. The building remains just staff only. So no phone number, but there is supportkuaf.com. If that is not a viable option for you, you can make your contribution by writing a check, putting in an envelope, and sending it to 9 South School Street, Fayetteville, 72701. From everyone that works here, from all of your fellow listeners who've already contributed, thank you very much. This is Ozarks at Large. Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson signed into law a measure allowing medical providers the right to refuse certain non-emergency treatment to patients based on religious, ethical, or moral objections. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
Senate Bill 289, now Act 462, titled the Medical Ethics and Diversity Act, was sponsored by State Senator Kim Hammer, a Republican from Benton. The law enables healthcare institutions and providers to refuse to give care to a patient, even when medically necessary, for moral or religious reasons, except in an emergency. Dr. Joe Thompson is CEO and president of Arkansas Center for Health Improvement, ACHI for short, headquartered in Little Rock.
An example of this act would be an opioid addict who came for treatment and a provider did not believe in buprenorphine as a medical modality. They wouldn't have to tell the patient about that. That's a real life potential example. A more extreme example is a patient could come wearing a MAGA hat or a Biden t-shirt, and the provider might just say, I don't want to treat you because of something about you. This is really a law that has broad reach and no safeguards for the patient.
Thompson says Arkansas laws made previous to Act 462 accommodate medical providers and institutions with strong religious or moral beliefs.
This law extends that to any service, and our ACHI board came out strongly with concerns about the potential for discriminatory practices by doctors, and those safeguards are not in what now is law in the state of Arkansas.
For example, pharmacists can now deny dispensing contraceptives to women. Hospitals can deny hormone therapy to transgender patients or refuse to dispense palliative pain medication out of concern it could end a life. Arkansas physicians can also now disregard a patient's end-of-life directive. The law makes sure to protect medical practitioners, providers, and institutions with religious and moral convictions from retaliatory litigation.
The trust is a critical component between a physician and patient interaction. And for decades, we have had informed consent where the patient is the one that has optimal information about the medical treatments that are available. And this law really shifts that to where if a physician, a doctor doesn't believe in a service because of an ethical or a moral or a perception, that they don't even have to tell the patient about that service anymore. And that leads to the real potential to have the possibility that doctors could discriminate without disclosing what medical therapies are available. This law is very broad and has the potential to cause, I think, a lot of harm.
Arkansas patients will be forced to screen medical providers for potential religious, moral, and possibly political bias.
So that it really is what the doctor believes in, which they are practicing then with the patient, as opposed to what historically has been true is the doctor might not want to provide palliative care, but they could let the patient know that it is available from another provider. This law now no longer requires the doctor to share that information.
Opponents say the law could limit medical research as well. The legislature refused to pass a similar bill in 2018, but Thompson says the political climate in Arkansas is ripe for such measures.
Well, I think one of the things that's going on is there is a hyper-focus on specific issues that are politically charged, and the extreme politics that we have in our General Assembly are enabling legislation like this to pass. And I think that's a concern. I have consistently said that I don't believe the practice of medicine. Every patient is unique. Every situation is somewhat entrusted to that patient-physician interaction. And for us to be passing laws about how medicine should be practiced is, I think, a slippery slope and a cause for real concern.
Opponents to the bill say medical care needs to be expanded, not contracted, especially in the midst of a devastating and ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Regarding the new law, the ACLU of Arkansas says it is yet another brazen attempt to make it easier to discriminate against people and deny Arkansans the health care services they need. Act 462 will take effect this summer. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The Symphony of Northwest Arkansas is making the best of a pandemic year. This week, a new multimedia release featuring 9 wind musicians from Sona and visual arts from Paris, France, will be available for free streaming. The project continues a series of performances that began when Executive Director D. Riley Nicholson came to Sona last August in the middle of the pandemic. He recently told me the symphony was performing online and outside within a month of his arrival.
There was no time to waste because, our musicians need to be supported and have work, and our community needs to be served, and music is an integral part of arts and culture, and we all need that right now.
The next, what would I call this, release, performance release from Sona?
I'd say multimedia premiere or okay. Multimedia release.
It is on April 2nd, and as you just mentioned, it is multimedia. There's music, but there's so much more. What will we experience?
Right, so it's a collaboration between us, of course, 9 of our wind players, and local videographer and audio engineer, Darren Crisp, and Parisian French visual artist, Roman Erquillon. There we go. Had to brush off my French pronunciation there. And so it really is a collaboration, and not just each of us. Each of those parties did their work, and then that was it. There was a lot of feedback, so one person's work would influence the other's work, and a lot of creative collaborations that organically shaped the production.
Let's start with the 9 wind players. How did that work? How were they assembled?
This was actually Paul Haas's idea. I was not familiar with this piece. The composer is Charles Aguinot. He's a little bit more well-known for his operas and his vocal work and sacred music. But he did, at the end of his career, compose this. It's a gem. It's a really lovely piece that connects with the classical era, but it's also simultaneously very turn of the 19th, 20th century at the same time. So it's a beautiful piece. And then the idea was to connect that with Roman, the visual artist, because we thought those would pair really well together.
Have you asked any musicians, because it's one thing to play on your own, by yourself, in front of a green screen, and quite another to be seated on a stage and hearing, people to your left and people to your right. Have you talked to any of the musicians about what has been different and what they've learned from this experience?
Yeah, they definitely, I try to keep an open door and hear whatever their concerns are so that we can have the best product. And there was definitely some concerns from the musicians. They usually are, like you said, they're right next tiering the person to their right and to their left to make sure the timing is right, to make sure the tuning is right. So we mitigated that problem by using a reference track and a click track. So they were able to listen to that. And then we also worked with a wonderful audio editor, Paul Fowler, who we worked with on a lot of our digital productions. And he is a pro and is able to fix some of those things that would have been ironed out just by that live interaction. So it was helped by the reference recording and by post-production.
No one would suggest that they want live performance to go away. But I guess one of the small silver linings out of the past 12 plus months is that you can work with someone in Colorado, someone in Paris, and there's not the cost of a plane ticket involved.
Exactly. It really has opened up possibilities. And I think it's opened up those possibilities to work with those people. And because of that, it's something we wanted to lean into because, we see Sona as a community player, and it's obviously we want to use our artist. It was important for us to have a local a local footprint by working with Darren and CRISPR Recording Studios here in Fayetteville. But, you know, Sona also, because of the talent of our players, because of Paul's leadership and just the generosity and the possibilities from Northwest Arkansas, we can also be on the international stage. So we wanted to lean into all of that and kind of have our cake and eat it too.
Hopefully we have more pandemic days behind us than we have in front of us. What is a challenge for thinking about what is still a future with uncertain timelines? When can you have a full auditorium at Walton Arts Center? When can you have guests come in? What's that like to try to think about 2022?
It's a real challenge because we kind of have to think of two. There are many scenarios, but we're approaching it from sort of creating a best case scenario and a worst case scenario, right? So the best case scenario is we return to the Walton Arts Center in full force with a full audience, like a normal season would look for the most part. But then we also have to create a plan for a mildly worst case scenario, which I think is still socially distant seating, socially distanced orchestra. And so we're right now developing both of those plans. And it might end up that we need to land somewhere in the middle, but that's our strategy right now to make sure that we're prepared for whatever comes our way.
D. Riley Nicholson is the executive director of SONA, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas. The latest digital multimedia performance will be available for free beginning Friday at sonamusic.org and at the SONA Facebook page and SONA YouTube channel. He spoke with Ozarks at Large earlier this month via Zoom. This is Ozarks at Large. That's music you'll hear in that Sona presentation that's available beginning Friday. This is a Wednesday edition of Ozarks at Large. If you have plants in the ground, especially if you're in Northwest Arkansas, be aware there is a freeze warning in Northwest Arkansas tonight. Lows around 30 with clear conditions. Lows expected to be in the mid-30s overnight for the Arkansas River Valley tomorrow. Sunshine throughout the day. National Weather Service says highs from the mid-50s tomorrow in northwest Arkansas, lower to mid-60s throughout the Arkansas River Valley. Our great friends Lynn and Joel Carver of Springdale have issued a challenge to Ozarks at Large listeners today until the end of this hour. We're trying to reach $500 contributed by you and listeners like you. When we reach $500, that will be matched by Lynn and Joel Carver of Springdale for a $1,000 contribution to KUAF. So we would love to hear from you right now. Because you rely on KUAF and the news and information that you hear every day of the year, international news, national news, and local, state, and regional news right here, because you listen, we need to hear from you so we can continue to bring you all of the services we do. You can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com. A global pandemic, reckoning with racism and social justice, a legislative session that continues in Little Rock, severe economic challenges, big stress on democratic institutions. In a time like none of us can remember, there's invaluable strength in community institutions like KUAF. KUAF's resources are kept strong by the community of people who recognize the profound importance of an independent news service driven by a public mission. Staying well informed has never been so important to our daily lives. And KUAF has never been more determined to ensure that the indispensable news and information you count on is always here for you. KUAF needs your generous support more than ever in order to serve you. As fierce and unwavering as our commitment and determination are, listener funds always the critical power source that makes all of this possible. Please take action with your donation right now. You can give a one-time gift. You can become a sustaining monthly giver. You can give a gift in honor of someone you love, all at supportkuaf.com. And we do have that Ozarks at Large challenge. It's for this hour only. By the end of the show, we want to have reached $500 contributed. If we do, it's matched by Lynn and Joel Carver of Springdale, making it a $1,000 Ozarks at Large for KUAF. You can make your contribution right now at supportkuaf.com. And for this Spring On Air fundraiser, we are offering some special gifts to you as thanks for your contribution. For $120, or if you'd prefer, a $10 a month KUAF sustaining membership, you can show off your love for KUAF with an iHeart KUAF tote bag. It's great for taking around your groceries, your books, whatever you need, and it's reusable. It makes a great gift for loved ones who also love KUAF. Whatever the amount of your contribution, we need to hear from you now. If we haven't yet, you can make your contribution at supportkuaf.com. From all of us at Ozarks at Large, from all of my colleagues that work and volunteer at KUAF, from all of your fellow listeners who've already contributed, thank you very much.
Support for KUAF comes from the Walmart Museum on the Square in downtown Bentonville. Scheduled visits are welcomed daily from noon to 6 p.m. WalmartMuseum.com to reserve your visit or for more information.
This is Ozarks at Large, and once again, thank you to everybody who has contributed during this spring fundraiser to KUAF. You can do so at supportkuaf.com. Thanks to our sustaining members, and thank you if you have contributed during this hour of Ozarks at Large. Remember, we do have the Ozarks at Large Challenge from the Carvers in Springdale, Lynn and Joel Carver. It started out at the beginning of our hour at $500. We continue to work toward that challenge. You can help in the amount you choose at supportkuaf.com. It's a Wednesday edition of Ozarks at Large, so we'll continue our series marking the 150th anniversary of the University of Arkansas with Charlie Allison, the executive editor for University Relations at the U of A. If you have been tracking a package during the pandemic, or since that big ship was stuck in the Suez Canal, you know that things might take a little bit longer getting to you than they used to. But imagine more than 100 years ago, when you're across the ocean and you're waiting for a University of Arkansas diploma. Charlie Allison tells us more.
The first international student's name appeared on Senior Walk in 1912. The student was part of a small flurry of international students who started coming to the university during the first decade of the 20th century. They came from India, Japan, Ireland, and their arrival appeared to coincide with the university's creation of a curricula for master's degrees. That first international name on Senior Walk was listed with the initials N.I. and the last name of Takata. In those early days of Senior Walk, the names of the senior class were listed, regardless of whether a student did or did not graduate. It was all the seniors. So I wondered whether Takata had earned a degree. Turns out, so did Takata for a while. Takata's story begins in the ancient port city of Kobe, Japan. In the summer of 1907, a commercial steamer, the SS Tremont, pulled out of the Kobe harbor. Slowly it gained way, and the city of Kobe and its newly built Oriental Hotel receded from view. Then the backdrop of Mount Rokko also disappeared beyond the horizon. One of the passengers on board was listed in the ship's manifest as Nina Ichitaro Takata, a student headed for the busy docks of Tacoma, Washington. Upon arriving, he began learning English, and when he felt confident enough, he sent off for catalogs of study from 16 American universities to examine their electrical engineering programs. Eventually, he chose Arkansas over Purdue and set out for Fayetteville in the summer of 1909. He arrived in Fayetteville just before the start of fall classes and with just enough time to find a boarding room in a hillside Victorian house on Lafayette Street. Takata stood 5 foot 6 inches tall, a lanky 20-year-old with a noticeable scar on his left cheek. His stoic bearing, dapper bow ties, and rimless glasses gave him less the look of a wide-eyed freshman than that of a distinguished professor. He took electrical engineering classes under professors Nathan Gladson and Lee Sedwick Olney. Gladson was a fantastic researcher in all things electric during the late 19th century and the early 20th century. From building electric generators to starting a phone company to experimenting with wireless telegraphy and the very earliest X-rays, so Takata was learning from among the best. The Cardinal Yearbook described Takata as being brimful of ambition and tenacity, but it also teased him for taking advantage now and then of his, quote, strong stand with the co-eds. The yearbook also joked that when Takata returned to Japan, he might resurrect the Russo-Japanese War and electrocute Russia. Well, Takata kept his head in the books. He became a senior for the 1911-12 school year and was thus added to Senior Walk with the 1912 class. And in fact, he did finish his undergraduate degree at the same time. But what Senior Walk couldn't reveal was that Takata then began working on a graduate degree in electrical engineering. Before he could finish, though, he had to return home to Kobe. Once back in Japan, Takata continued his work on his master's degree through correspondence courses. He finished his thesis in early 1917 and sent it to the Department of Electrical Engineering. Professor Gladson replied with a letter in March to congratulate Takata on his successful completion of the program. Takata, who was by then working at a powerhouse in Kobe, sent a reply to Gladson asking him to wrap the diploma carefully to prevent it from getting wet during the long voyage. Then a month went by, and Takata hadn't received the diploma, so he sent a follow-up letter to inquire about it. Another month passed with no reply, so Takata wrote again. Then another month passed, and Takata again sent a letter to Gladson to say with more urgency that he wants to invite a few folks over to announce his glorious approval of his work, but he can't do so until he has the diploma in hand. Well, Gladson, who had been away for most of the summer, returned to campus, and an earnest search to find the diploma began. He and an office secretary tracked down its movements as far as Seattle, but the trail went cold upon the northern Pacific waters. By September, Takata was doubting everything and wrote again, saying, "I fear that it may be that I failed to pass the examination or master's qualifications, so you had not written to me for your sympathy for me. I am getting too nervous now these days to know the resultants, for whenever we talk over anything about USA, with our folks, you know, they ask me about my thesis every time." I learned of this story because the editors of the student newspaper chronicled the misadventure of the missing diploma in their first October edition of 1917, and they wrote that they pitied poor Takata. Would he ever receive his sheepskin, they asked. Then they had the temerity to recommend that their former classmate be patient, like the famous Madame Butterfly. I was a little surprised that a reporter for the University Weekly knew of Puccini's opera, but it turned out that the story of the lovesick Madame Butterfly had recently been turned into a silent film by Paramount, starring Mary Pickford, and it had been shown at the Sky Dome Theater near downtown Fayetteville. So I suspect the editors had memorized the subtitles. Being patient, though, didn't really turn out so well for Madame Shuso-san. And luckily for Takata, he quit waiting too. The very next issue of the University Weekly reported that Takata had searched through a mountain of unclaimed parcels at the Kobe post office, and he had found his diploma. His name and address had accidentally been torn from the package, and only the city name, Kobe, remained. Takata's holy grail, the diploma, was safe and sound. In one last jubilant letter, Takata wrote to Gladson, again in slightly broken English, "I felt so proud to open it and could not help to express my pleasant feeling on my face." May every graduate of the University of Arkansas feel so proud and express that pleasant feeling on their face, too.
Charlie Allison, the executive editor for University Relations at the University of Arkansas, delivers us profiles in the University of Arkansas's history each week as the university marks 150 years. By the way, it was officially 150 years since the charter this past weekend. This fall will mark 150 years since the first students showed up and went to class. There are many other commemorations besides our on-air remembrances from Charlie Allison. To find out more, go to 150.uark.edu. That's 150.uark.edu.
For the Central Arkansas Library System, I'm Mark Crist with an Encyclopedia of Arkansas Minute. In 1918, Arkansas and the world were reeling from the deadliest pandemic in human history, the Spanish flu. The disease may have started in Haskell County, Kansas, from which it quickly spread to a military base crowded with World War I recruits. At North Little Rock's Camp Pike, the infirmary was soon admitting up to 1,000 men a day, leading to a quarantine. Despite that, the disease soon migrated to Little Rock and into rural Arkansas, where many victims were likely never reported. By October, the state confirmed 1,800 cases of flu, and the Arkansas State Board of Health declared a statewide quarantine, even as it offered such helpful hints as, cover up each cough and sneeze. If you don't, you'll spread disease. By the time the epidemic ended in 1919, 7,000 Arkansans were reported dead, though the toll was almost certainly higher. At least 675,000 Americans died of the Spanish flu, and worldwide deaths may have numbered 100 million. To learn more, visit encyclopediaofarkansas.net.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and all of LaFleur County. Thanks for letting us be part of your Wednesday. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Contributors this Wednesday afternoon included Antoinette Grajeda, Jacqueline Froelich, Charlie Allison, Timothy Dennis produced today's show in his home studio in downtown Fayetteville. Our theme, titled The First Hurrah, is written and performed by Daryl Sean. You can find Daryl online wherever you find out more about music. Thanks to everybody who went to supportkuaf.com and contributed during this hour. If you haven't done so yet, you can help us meet the challenge from Lynn and Joel Carver of Springdale. The challenge started when Ozarks at Large started. It goes until the end of this show, which is about 2 minutes or so. And if we meet that $500 challenge, it's $1,000 for KUAF raised during this Wednesday afternoon of Ozarks at Large. All contributions count. You can make that contribution safely, securely, quickly at supportkuaf.com. If you can make a gift of $60 or $5 a month as a sustaining member, you can select from several different gifts offered to you. A KUAF coffee mug that you can use every morning of the year. A scratching the surface sling bag. It's like a backpack. It's called a sling bag. It has the scratching the surface logo on it. Or you could select the Ozarks at Large 30th anniversary poster that we had made last year. Any of those gifts for your gift of $60, or if you commit to a $5 a month sustaining membership, you can do all of that and look at everything at supportkuaf.com. I mentioned sustaining membership, more and more KUAF listeners doing that. There are many advantages to becoming a sustaining member. One, when you become a sustaining member, we know that we have a commitment of funds that allow us to make plans further out, that allow us to know we can continue to bring you programs like Hidden Brain, 1A, Ozarks at Large, All Things Considered, for the next year. Two, it's convenient for you. Small contribution now adds up over a year's time through 12 months to a bigger contribution, perhaps, than you could make right now. And finally, you don't have to wonder if it's your turn to contribute because you know you're doing it every month. You can become a sustaining member right now at supportkuaf.com. Thank you so much for your continued support of Ozarks at Large and all the programs that you listen to on 91.3 KUAF. Don't forget, Ozarks at Large is available as a podcast. You can subscribe for free through any of the major podcast distributors. You can also ask your smart speaker to please play Ozarks at Large and hear the most recent daily edition of our show. You can also sign up for free at KUAF.com for our daily email newsletter, which arrives every afternoon, tells you what was on the show earlier that day, and gives you direct links so you can listen to those stories and interviews. That, too, a free service that's available to you through KUAF.com. You can always go to OzarksAtLarge.com to learn more about what you heard each day. And you can support all those services at SupportKUAF.com. Thanks to the Carvers for making their challenge. Thanks to you for listening. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio, I'm Kyle Kellums. Please be well.